Great friends. Hey, it's Thursday afternoon, and we are taking to the stream for everybody that's just starting to come into our YouTube chat. Welcome. What's going on? Everybody over here on Facebook that's just getting involved in a watch party. What's cooking? It is great to be with everybody here on Thursday. This would be episode, I do this every freaking day. What is today? Episode 205, 6, 7, Alex? What do you think?
Seven.
Episode 207. This would be quarantine day, depending on whose executive decision we're going with.
No, it just depends what city you live in.
73-ish?
Yep.
73 of quarantine. And I think that today is May 20-something-ish, right?
That's accurate.
What is today's date? Anybody 28th. Know? May 28th. Okay, very good. Well, great friends, we're happy that everybody's here. Say hello to everybody. And I'll tell you my first thought, real quick. My first thought. I read a question that one of our longtime listeners posted on Sided when the question was, do you prefer Scott, Alex, and John all back together in the podcast den? And then he writes, Scott misses the dream team altogether, and so do I. How about you, America? And right now, America. I have it as 50, almost 52% of those who have voted this as at the time of this recording, 52% of people say yes, put the dream team back together in the podcast den in parts unknown, California. So with 52% of people already voting in the affirmative, I would say to you, Alex and John, when are you guys ready to get back together again in here? Because I'm going to just say this before you even answer. The 1090 thing is, I've said all along, I'm cautiously optimistic, but I'm telling you, boxes are getting checked one by one. This Bill Hagen guy, he's good, okay? And Bill, welcome to the YouTube chat. But Bill is knocking them off one by one, piece by piece. This is done, this is done, this is done. And even the lineup is getting kind of completed. And
anything completed with the lineup?
There are three pieces of the lineup 100% completed, but I can't say anything.
Is there an affiliation? A network affiliation?
There are many network affiliations.
Because this is going to help me get press passes to stuff. So
I'm just asking. I'm just asking for two reasons: overnight programming, unless he's selling that,
got that,
or replaying that,
got
and
it.
Then B,
yeah.
What games can you carry?
Okay, both great questions. Overnights and weekends, yes, there will be some affiliation with different networks, and two in particular. I won't say which ones right now.
How many letters in the networks?
Four. Four letters.
Ooh.
Four letters.
Okay. Okay.
Because
okay.
There's only one four-letter network.
And three letters.
No.
And three.
No. No. See, I think he's going to do that.
And three.
I think he's going to do that.
And three. Okay, there's three.
Because there's like 53-letter, right. three-letter
network. But there's only one four-letter network.
Okay. Well, anyway, listen, let me just say this. There will be overnight programming. There will be weekend programming available. And yes, there will be games available. I don't know exactly for sure yet, but I know that a bunch of different networks are available with lots of different great content. People have been calling me Notre Dame football, Cowboys football, Raiders football. I mean, people have been calling saying, we have these properties. Do you want them on 1090? We want to be on 1090. So I'm just telling you, Bill Hagen, check, check, check. So it gets us back to the question, Alex, and I don't know if you can put it up on the screen again.
I already did, yeah.
Okay. One more time. Humor me. Do you prefer the three of us in the podcast den? Hey, look, maybe you guys think no. Everybody stay where you are. You know Alex is paranoid. You know he's already had it twice. Maybe you think we should not all be back together again. Make sure you get in there and vote. I voted for yes. I want you guys back up in here. And I'm telling you that as the boxes get checked and we head towards a launch date on 1090, we're going to all have to be together again.
Shout out.
All right. Say hello to Grande. What's going on, Alex? What's your first thought?
My first thought is a question directed at one Scott Kaplan.
Mm.
That hair looks pretty dark today, sir.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
You got some splaining to do. What happened?
Huh? Well, Truth be told, this true story. I have not yet gotten my hair cut.
Uh-huh.
I have not yet gotten my hair colored.
Okay.
But I did this morning. This is a little weird. You know what? I'll admit this. Fuck it. I don't care. You ready? Check it out. So last night I'm over at my girlfriend's place, right? And she had two friends of ours. We had couples come over. So there were six of us. One of our friends, a guitar player for this band called Easy Wind. They're a Grateful Dead tribute band. They're unbelievable. Anyway, so we're all sitting around and I needed to take a shower before everybody came over. So I took a shower in her house and I have deodorant in her house and I've got a toothbrush and toothpaste. And I got a couple of articles of clothing. But in her medicine cabinet, in her bathroom, her master bathroom, there's the side that used to belong to her ex-husband. Okay. Dude, and there was hair gel in there. So I used it last night because otherwise I didn't have it and I was going to just go completely Jufro, right? And I worked with the hair last night with his gel. And I realized that, you know what? Even though the hair is longer, I kind of like it if I mat it down.
If you do something to it, yeah.
Right. So today I did it. Because of our guest, Brittany Urton, who's coming up in just a matter of moments, we need Brittany.
I didn't want to call you out.
No, it's true.
During the interview.
No, it's true. Brittany is gorgeous and she's talented and she's brilliant and we love her around here. And I felt like I needed to actually take a shower and put some stuff in my hair. So while it may look darker, Alex, I think that is just the gel talking.
Okay.
And I think I learned it last night while using my girlfriend's ex-husband's gel. That's a true story.
I can vibe with that. I can vibe with that answer for two reasons, or for one main reason. When I don't have anything in my hair, like right now, but on camera you can't see, my hair is kind of red, brownish without product. With product, it's jet black. So I don't understand what product does to the hair color. So I can attest to what you're saying. I don't color my hair red or brown. So I get what you're saying. Makes sense to me.
I hope GF doesn't kill me for admitting that, but it's true. Like there's still just a couple of leftover things from the ex that's still in the house. You know, things that he didn't go into the medicine cabinet and go, give me my gel.
I don't use any gel, so I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
Do you use Soul Glow?
No. Oh, hell to the yeah. Wow.
Coming to America was on yesterday. Popped in my head, dude.
You know what's funny is I swear to God, as soon as you said you don't use gel, the first thing out of my mouth was, no, brother, you use Soul Glow. And I didn't say it just because I was going to get, oh, that's the way it is in America now?
Uh-huh. I could say things that Browner won't jump on me.
Yeah.
I don't use Soul Glow. Sorry to disappoint.
Because if not, the back of that seat right there is going to be dripping.
Straight for you. Oh, I was given a request yesterday, so here you go.
Go ahead.
Buckle up, baby.
Oh, my God.
Strap in. It's a great show.
Oh, my God.
Explain the chair, though, dude.
So the chair basically comes from a different car, and the chair came out of the car. And so where I'm recording, I got the seat is horrible to sit in, but this is so much more comfortable. I just decided to go with it. Now I'm on the floor, so I'm like a midget in all our pictures. But nevertheless, at least I'm comfortable. I have a question.
I had a question.
Question?
As you piss off all dwarfs, I have a question for you.
My bad, little folks. Sorry.
Okay. So you kept telling us, though, that you had something big planned for a green screen behind you, and all I see are white walls. When is the brother going to hook this up?
Give me probably another week and a half because I had a setback and I had to change green screens. Oh. I was using four part neon paper, but now I have a not a whiteboard, but a piece of like legit wall.
Oh,
but in a week and a half, we're gonna be back in studio. So what's the point?
Yeah,
because the point is to be able to create it on my own time.
Oh.
Got it. All right. So Alex's first thought was hair.
Your hair.
My first thought was, are we all getting back in the studio? Big Brown, let me jump into you because we're going to get to a bunch of stuff in advance of our guest, Brittany Urton. What do you got? What's on your mind?
I want people to not forget that the NBA is coming back. And when it does come back, Giannis is the MVP. I saw someone try to do a torpedo message today. I see your face, Alex. I saw someone try to do a torpedo message today by the name of Colin Cowherd, by throwing out that LeBron is the MVP. Because of all these things that have nothing to do with actual court performance, okay? The Bucks have the most wins. Giannis averages more points, more rebounds, and more blocks. So therefore, with the most wins, more points than the person in second place, more rebounds than the person in second place, and more better defense than the person in second place, that guy is the MVP. LeBron has had an amazing season. The Lakers have been resurgent this year. I'm not saying LeBron's not good or LeBron's better than Giannis. I'm not saying that. I'm saying Giannis is having a better season than LeBron because the Bucks are having a better season than the Lakers. Do not let out of sight, out of mind get you. And when the Lakers come back and be like, oh, because they get the most publicity, LeBron's the MVP. He is not. That award belongs in Milwaukee. That is my first thought. Welcome back to sports, America.
Yeah, yeah. My first thought is LeBron's the MVP.
See, my first thought was not shaking my head at your content. It was shaking because you sold us before the show. You got a first thought that you want to get off your mind. Did not think it was going to be about MVP.
No, me neither. No. In fact, listen, since we talked yesterday, and you know, yesterday's show was a weird show because I told people on Twitter, don't watch, don't listen. Because there was so much emotion yesterday and there was so much discomfort yesterday that I was like, don't watch this and don't listen to this. Well, I sat and watched it and listened, and I was in the YouTube chat the whole time. And I actually thought the show was a lot better than I realized because there was this uncomfortableness that happened. And subsequently in the 24 hours, my goodness, man, you see what's going on. You know, the rioting in Minneapolis, the I'll call it rioting. I mean, I'm not sure that's the right word. You know, the crowds that have come together in LA, people just pissed off about what has happened. And I'll tell you guys, I put out something on Instagram yesterday and I just asked a question. I posed the picture of Kaepernick on his knee and I was in the background from a game that I'd covered. And I just posed the question, you know, do your opinions change? And my God, did I get destroyed yesterday on Instagram, because people still have this crazy like feeling towards Kaepernick through all of this. But the show was weird yesterday because not only did we get into all of that, it was very emotional for all of us on different levels. And I was surprised and happy to see a lot of people in the YouTube chat saying, dude, it's totally cool, man. We're happy you guys are talking about this. But later in the show, we get to Barbara Bree, the mayoral candidate, talking about the San Diego State Stadium issue. How freaking funny was it yesterday, everybody, when she kept taking phone calls and she would get pissed at, hey, I told you, not available till noon. Boom.
Slam the phone.
Or how about when she goes, can I get a minute? You know, I got to go downstairs and kick some ass, you know? And we just sat there talking about her the whole time, which was great. Now, to advance the story of Barbara yesterday, Alex, if you could put up on the screen for everybody, Jack McGrory. Remember yesterday I was talking about this all feels slimy to me. Jack McGrory was the city's manager back when Petco Park was being discussed, and he helped Petco Park get pushed through city bureaucracy. As soon as he was done working for the city in this capacity, John Moores went and hired him, and he then became a rich guy working for John Moores. I don't know Jack is a bad guy or a good guy. I just know that Jack worked for the city and was plucked by John Moores. And now, as a representative of the state California system of school, you know, whatever the CSU system, believe me, he's the guy in there. It's like being a lobbyist. It's like working directly for Moores. That's what it is when you're a billionaire. He puts out this tweet that he was in a conference meeting for 11 hours, deja vu, no breaks, but an agreement has been reached now between the city and the state and the university system and San Diego State, and everything deal is done. And everybody's going to shake hands on Friday and they can start putting shovels in ground, because didn't Jack McGrory tell us, Alex, when we were still on the radio, that the Aztecs will be playing in this football stadium by like 2022?
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, do it, man. If we said it yesterday, I'm skeptical. You can call me a hater, all good. But if you can get this done, wonderful. Do I still think 33,000 people are going to crowd into a stadium next to one another? Maybe not right away.
In 2022, yeah.
Okay, maybe they will. Maybe they will. And if they do, great. And if a stadium is a really nicely built stadium and it can accommodate 30,000 and we can pack it every weekend and college football becomes a big deal, awesome. Go for it. Just do something.
Wait, you don't want to be able to expand to 50,000 to get an NFL team? What? No? You don't want to do that?
Why are y'all trying to bring up bad negative stuff, man? Why can't – listen, that was a political bullet point to get people to vote for it. We all know that's never going to happen. Y'all need to stop acting like haters, man. Y'all need to get behind San Diego State and the city to get something done, or y'all are going to be staring at some I Am Legend stadium there in the next 50 years, dude. Put your heads out your asses and start being supportive of San Diego State.
I told you yesterday, and I admitted it. I'm not embarrassed to admit it. I mean, you know, John Moores owned 1090, and John Moores is the energy behind all of this. And very frankly, if you want to know the truth, I mean, John Moores wanted the Chargers out of Mission Valley. He didn't care if they went to downtown, but he wanted them out of Mission Valley. So, you know, pushing them, you know, contributing to getting them out of San Diego. Hey, you get them out of here.
You want to talk about tweets? Did you see Jill Lieber-Stieg's tweets to the reply of that video that we put up with Barbara Bree?
I did not, as a matter of fact. Can you share your screen?
I will. I just need to find it because they were very interesting. She said just that San Diego State has been secretly trying to get the Chargers out of San Diego. Let me read it. Let me find it.
Yeah, here. I got it here.
She says, so I'll just put it on screen while you read it.
Oh, it says San Diego State undermined the Chargers' efforts beginning in 2004. They had their own ulterior motives once their idea for an open campus stadium failed. And it took getting through a couple of eras of politicians who didn't understand what transpired in the past. And they took land that was once valued at something like $500 to $600 million. And now they're trying to get it at probably 10% of that, $87 million, and trying to get Mission Valley site at bargain basement prices. Look, remember this. Did you put those on screen?
Mm-hmm.
Jill Stieg, probably watching and listening, is married to Jim Stieg. Jim Stieg worked for the Chargers. Jim Stieg worked for the Citizens Stadium Advisory Group. Jim Stieg had intimate knowledge of all of this. Jill Stieg isn't speaking out of turn. Jill Stieg is the wife of Jim Stieg. And by the way, she's an award-winning journalist. Look, all I'm telling you is this, is that John Moores did not want the Chargers in Mission Valley. He wanted them out of Mission Valley. And the way they described it to me back then was, we don't care if they go downtown. We just want them out of Mission Valley because eventually Mission Valley needs to be the San Diego State expansion. And so that was happening before the Chargers moved. And so now you've got this guy, Jack McGrory, just connect the dots, right? McGrory worked for the city as the city manager. And then he did when Petco Park was being built, or, you know, they were planning it. Moores was the energy behind Petco Park. Once Petco Park was done, McGrory was plucked from the city as the manager, where, you know, you're not making a lot of money, to now all of a sudden working for John Moores. He took over Larry Lucchino's office when Larry left the Padres to go to the Red Sox. I mean, all I'm saying is that I admitted it from the beginning. No hate towards San Diego State, nothing but love. They know in that athletic department how supportive I know I've been over the last 20 years. When I first came to San Diego, nobody paid attention to San Diego State. I mean, nobody. And I'm not taking credit like I did anything. I didn't. It was all of their winning that did it. But I'm just here to tell you that I've been supportive for a long time. I'm admitting to you that there's some personal bitterness because Moores, again, I was there. I was in those conversations with his people that they did not want the Chargers to stay in Mission Valley. And frankly, they really didn't want the Chargers to stay in San Diego anymore. So for me, I said it yesterday to Barbara Bree, the whole thing feels slimy. But in the final analysis, no hate, all love. In the final analysis, if they can put shovels in the ground and they can build a football stadium there, awesome. Because having your own football stadium that eventually is on the campus will make San Diego State's football team a much, much more attractive football program.
It's on the campus, technically.
Well, I'm saying the campus will grow around it.
Right, but that's not good. There's not going to be like classrooms. It'll be like dorms and offices.
Whatever, dude. I mean, as long as it's theirs, okay?
That's what matters.
You can't win if you're in an NFL football stadium as a college team. And take it from me, I know this stuff firsthand because my college football team, we had our own stadium on campus. And when Notre Dame came in on Saturday night, we were playing on ESPN, there were 60,000 people in that stadium. Now you play and you share a stadium with the Steelers and you could have Notre Dame come to town and you can't fill an NFL football stadium anymore. Maybe that's not even a great example, but if I'm just telling you that you lose the atmosphere in an NFL stadium that you have in a college stadium. So if San Diego's going to get it built, good.
I think that's correct, because if Notre Dame comes to town for Pitt, the campus is on fire about the game that's going to happen on the campus.
Was.
I think the same energy is going to happen for San Diego State. The campus will be on fire for whom, let's say, UCLA or USC is coming to play, and that energy will transfer to your stadium that is technically still on your campus. And so I think that you're going to see hopefully you'll see more energy towards the football program.
Well, this all started with yesterday's show being so strange because of, you know, the emotions of what we saw in Minneapolis turning into the conversation with Barbara Bree. And then as we come on today, there's advancements of both of those stories. So I'm glad everybody is here with us on a Thursday. Brittany Erton from NBC Sports and from TVG is going to make this show look very attractive in a matter of moments. You know, you get to see our three faces, and now all of a sudden you're going to throw some real beauty into the mix, okay? Rather than these three mugs. Oh, more beauty.
Speak for yourself over there. Yeah,
there you go. Hey, let me. What does your mom say?
I'm handsome.
Your mom.
First he said attractive.
Then I switched to handsome. I'm going to edit that one out.
No, don't edit.
I don't edit shit.
Your mother says, Grande Alejandro es muy guapo?
No, she doesn't. It was just a joke. I can't remember the last time my mom ever complimented my looks. No.
Really?
Yeah.
What was the last compliment your mom gave you?
She actually watched the show last week. And she was like, she said something that like stood out to me. She's like, I don't know what you guys talked about, but it was super entertaining. And I was like, oh, cool. So thanks, Mom.
All right. I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah.
Nice.
I actually got that from a friend yesterday who does not watch a single second of NBA basketball. He's like, but every time you guys talk about basketball, it makes me want to get into it. Is that also a compliment? Because I'll take it.
Yeah, right on. There you go. Way to go, man. Shout out. Hey, let me speaking of shout outs, let me say thanks to Corky's Pest Control, 1-800-901-1102. You know, what's so interesting is that as we're making these moves, preparing to put the podcast onto radio, one of the things that we're all talking about off air, and gosh, if you guys have suggestions, I'd love to hear this. But one of the things we're talking about is this. So when the podcast goes to commercial break for radio, well, the cameras are still going to be rolling. The monitors are still going to be on. Somebody's going to get up to go to the bathroom. Somebody's going to come back with something to eat. Although I'm going to ask Browner to keep things clean in the studio.
Come on, man. Don't do that to me.
How many times have you left a Popeyes wrapper?
That happened one time, dude. One time.
Panda Express.
Right.
That happened once.
Carl's Jr.
That never happened. I'm not a Carl's Jr. guy. Don't do that to me.
McDonald's? Okay, the point is that the cameras will still be rolling while we're at commercial breaks on radio. So if you're listening in your car and you're on radio, commercials. When you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, no commercials. We're still on, you know? So I was saying to the guys, it's like Corky's the spot. We're going to say, hey, Corky's Pest Control, 1-800-901-1102. We're going to be saying that all on radio. But then when radio gets into commercials for car dealership X and for, you know, grocery
Casino
store.
Casino Y.
Right, exactly. We're going to still be here and on YouTube. So I'll give Cork the double, you know, the bang, bang, the two peas and a biscuit.
Okay.
What?
Okay.
What?
That was, it was poorly, the punches?
Yeah.
How
is it?
No.
Pow, pow?
Yes. There we go.
Yeah, then what?
It didn't work for me, man.
Two peas and a biscuit?
Yeah, man.
Pow, pow.
Your energy with the punch is just, I wasn't satisfied.
I didn't know if I was really saying it right. I guess I wasn't. So Corky's Pest Control, you're going to hear about them on radio again, and you're going to continue to hear about them here in the digital world that we're currently living in. 1-800-901-1102, refer a great friend. I'm a customer. I refer Browner. Browner becomes a customer. I get $35. Refer a great friend, Corky's customers. 1-800-901-1102. Mountain Trust Mortgage and Realty Services. Here's another example. I'm going to tell everybody about Gary on the radio. 858-376-1299. Never make a move in real estate without our man, Gary Cooper, Koopa Loop. I'm going to do all that on radio. But while we're here and we're on podcast, even though the radio's in commercial, we're still here. Now's where we run in a Gary Cooper, you know, discussion where Gary's at his desk and he's talking about rates and he's saying, let me earn your business. And he's doing his thing and he's telling us stuff that we don't know. That can happen here. What do you guys think about this? Things are happening in commercial break on radio, but things are different happening here.
That sounds fun.
I think it's great.
I think it's going to work. I think it's going to really work for an ad partner because if I'm talking about a casino on radio, but there's another commercial going on radio, but we're talking about the casino here, or maybe we need to decorate the walls with some with some, you know, like some studio sponsors.
Even better, this hour on YouTube is sponsored by Fill in the Blank.
Well, how about right now? Being sponsored by Torrey Holistics. Torrey Holistics, you can use our promo code Grande and save 20%. You'll hear more about Torrey Holistics later in the highlight of the day, man. But TorreyHolistics.com, use our promo code Grande. Real quick, yesterday somebody said in our YouTube chat, hey, fellas, I tried to use Grande. It didn't work. I had to go inside Torrey Holistics. It worked inside, but it didn't work outside. Ruthie jumps right into the YouTube chat and she's like, hey, let us know how we can fix this for you. She takes it seriously. So thank you, Torrey Holistics, and thanks for watching, listening, and being a part of the YouTube chat. Shout outs to smsglobal.com, our texting partners. I love it when Alex sends out a text and I don't know if he's a few minutes late or if he's just playing games with people. Hey, did you forget about us? Here's our link. And so, texting works, dude. 98% of text messages get open. Text your audience with smsglobal.com. Special shout outs going out to Total T Clinic. Yo, Total T, right here. Give me one. Need
it. Butt.
Need it right here.
Come on, man.
B12 on this butt over here. Need it, Total T. When can I come back, Total T? I got to get back in. Shout outs to Rock and Wine Tours. Toby McDonald just crushing our YouTube chat, cited Twitter. Toby, awesome dude. Rockandwine.com. Hopefully we're going to get back to those wineries in Temecula real soon. And if you're looking for a new job, coastcarepartners.com, click in the upper right corner and use our referral code Great Friends so that they know that you're coming from us. Okay. All right. So Brittany Ertin is going to join us soon. And there's news today that the Del Mar racetrack is going to open. Is it July 10th or is it July 8th? I don't remember the exact date, but horse racing will return to Del Mar. Will we as sports fans and as concert goers, will we get the chance to go? Doesn't look like it. Doesn't look like it. So the summer will be horse racing and gambling, but there won't be beautiful people, great concerts, and you know, Del Margaritas and all the things we've come to expect. I just hope that between now, late May, and early July, and maybe even getting into August, like maybe things will loosen up and maybe Del Mar will be able to accommodate fans.
I think if they open their doors and they figure out how to welcome people in to actually view the racing, because they have a lot of space to accommodate these people, they would have the greatest season of racing I think they have ever seen, because some people would come in rebellion, some people would come to have a good time, and some people would come to see the two things combined, because it would be the largest active sport taking place in Southern California. They would get news coverage all around the world. And so I think they would benefit from actually opening their doors, as much as I've been the person like, no. I think they would benefit from that more than anybody, actually.
Would you go? If I told you there were 10,000 people at Del Mar, Alex, would you go? You've been the most paranoid of us all.
No, I'm not going. But that's just me. Like I know that there's a lot of people out there that are down to go anywhere right now if it's open. Like you can see what happened to PB last week. You just walk around any neighborhood. Restaurants are half capacity and they're at half capacity. People running out. I try to go into a barbershop online. They don't have any reservations until 2 weeks from now already. People are ready to go back and do things. That just because I won't do it doesn't mean that there's not thousands and thousands and thousands of people that are ready to go.
I would do it because it's an open air facility. If you were to tell me that this was in a stadium, a closed stadium, I would be, I would say no. I would probably most likely say no. But since this is an open air area, I would say yes.
See, so Del Mar is going to come back with racing. And again, I think your point is good, John, that they could really blow up, because here's the thing. You know, we may not have baseball. And I know we had this conversation last week. I said, baseball's not coming back. Then I told you my dad, who's drug testing, was told that, you know, they're going to have a 3-week spring training and he's going to have to come back to the Grapefruit League and test these guys. And now you're seeing this public spat between baseball players and their union and the owners. And even today, you know, the most famous baseball agent, a guy by the name of Scott Boras, the headline is he's told his clients not to bail out the owners. You know, that this is an opportunity for the players to make a stand against the owners. And I've been looking at The reason I said that I don't think baseball will be played is because I've been, I thought if you're a $30 million a year player, do you want to take the risk for much less money? So I was reading this guy, you guys must know who Jeff Passan is, the, mm-hmm. the ESPN baseball reporter. Yes. He was saying by tweet, I have the tweet up here, that if you make $30 million a year, I was using that because that's what Manny Machado makes. If you make $30 million a year, the proposal on the table right now from the owners of baseball teams is, hey, Manny, you make 30, but we're only going to play the second half of the season and we're not going to be able to generate the kind of revenue we might normally. So your $30 million contract becomes a $7 million contract, but you're Oof. Only playing half the year. Okay. Oof. So look, you were expecting 30, but we were expecting 162 games. Now we're only going to have 81 games, but we were also expecting 3 million people in the stadium for the year. But now we're only expecting like 400,000 for the year. So your 30 million based on the number of games and the number of tickets that we'll be able to sell, et cetera, your 30 million becomes 7 million for half of a baseball season. And I'm of the opinion that guys who make 35 million, guys who make 30 million, and I'll just go down the list, 25 million, 20 million, 50 million, 10 million. If you make $10 million a year last year in baseball, I know people say you've got fancy cars and expensive houses and a lifestyle that you want to maintain. And this is money that you won't make if you don't play. I'm just telling you, the highest end of the food chain is not going to want to play for this reduced rate. 7 million to you and me change our whole lives. 7 million to a guy who's making 30 million to put himself at risk, put his family at risk, not play the regular season the way it's supposed to be played, and to do it at this big of a discount is, as Boris is suggesting to his clients, you're bailing out the owners. And they're billionaires, so screw them and pay us. And when you look at some of the comments, you know, Alex, I'm sure you put up on the screen Max Scherzer's comments. He's saying, look, after discussing the latest developments with the rest of the players, there's no reason to engage with Major League Baseball any further and their compensation reductions. I won't bother you with reading the rest of this, but look, the players, the guys who are in control of their own union, the high-end guys, the superstars, the guys making the big money, they're not having it. They want their money. And why wouldn't they want their money? Because baseball contracts have always been known as guaranteed, right? You know, a football player gets fired, gets cut. Hey, he got his upfront money, but he's not getting the rest of his contract. Remember a guy who played for the Padres, Carlos Quinton? Remember how this guy got cut by the Padres and he still owed him like $40 million? Years after the fact, they were like, we're still paying this guy $8 million a year because the contract was guaranteed whether he played or he didn't play. These players now are saying, I signed a $30 million deal. Pay me my $30 million. And if you're going to try and take my 30 and knock it down to 7 and get 50% of me for 25% of my salary, I'm not playing. I'll see you in spring training next year. I don't think baseball is played.
I find it interesting that when Blake Snell verbalized this on video, he got so much backlash, but Max Scherzer can write this and it doesn't land the same way. I find it interesting that the owners won't open up the books for the players to see why they feel like they lose money every year, but yet the owners never complain about owning the team. If you make more money at the end of the year, they don't cut the players an extra share. And so this year, that business, like any other business, is going to lose money. So therefore, now you're looking at the players to give you back money when you don't give them more money when you make more money. So I don't really understand why fans are overwhelmingly always against players and never overwhelmingly against owners. I will never understand that.
Well, I just think the reason it didn't get backlash is because Max Scherzer is part of the 8-man governor board that's representing the MLBPA. He's one of the guys, whereas Blake Snell did it in the middle of a Call of Duty game, and he said it just off the cuff.
And he sounded like a punk.
But both what you're saying is true. Both of what you guys are saying is true. But he said the same thing Max Scherzer said. Yes,
you're right. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. He did. And I had no problem with what he's saying. Him saying it is what led me to say, I don't think they'll play. And then, you know, Bryce Harper came out and said whatever he had to say. And so when you post those,
by the way, none of the three of us ever said what he said was wrong. It was just at the at the time of when he said it, which was a month or 6 weeks ago, whatever it was, in the middle of all this, when nothing was reopening, when people were dying left and right, and people were losing their jobs, millions and millions of people were losing their jobs. And he's talking about, I want my 10 million. Like, that's what we had the content of it now. But now it's 6 weeks later, and it's a whole different conversation because things are opening back up. I think it's just a little different situation.
Yeah, and I think that it's what Alex has just said is really the thrust of people were hurting, people were losing their jobs, and these guys are arguing publicly about massive numbers of dollars, and that is a turnoff for most people. You know, and that's really why. Yeah. I mean, it's just that's really why.
Which, by the way, though, I agree with what Max Scherzer, with what Blake Snell said. I think, listen, you signed this deal where we took a pay cut already and we agreed to do prorated salaries. That's what you signed up for in March, and that's what we're going to go for now. Why the F would I go out and if I'm – I don't care who. If you're Manny, if you're Mike Trout, if you're – I think Mike Trout would get paid like $9 million this year if they did it under that. Why would they do that? They're just because the MLB owners are not going to get their full cut of the pie. They're trying to put it all on the players. And Scott Boras is right. The player shouldn't take the brunt of it. The player shouldn't take the risk of it. This is an unprecedented situation. And I know people are going to have to bend a little bit, but that's ridiculous, man. And that's why the players want to play more games to get their prorated salaries up. And that's why players are not going to agree to that, because it's ridiculous. And by the way, you're going to really see who's in it for the money. Because when a deal gets done, which it's going to – I think a deal will get done. And that's when you're going to see if Manny Machado comes out, it's like, I'm not playing for that. Even if it's not what it is and the rest of the team comes back, that's when you're going to be like, who's really in it for the money?
There's no guarantees in business. Scott, you are in business in a lot of different facets. You understand that there are no guarantees in business. So why should Major League Baseball owners be guaranteed to make a certain amount of money, and when they incur a loss, they can't shift that loss on their employees or their partners, because neither can any other business. So I just don't get why people don't understand that.
Yeah, look, if you own a business, if you own the Padres and you expect your revenues to be, I'm just making up a number, $300 million this year, and your payroll is for players, $200 million. And you're now all of a sudden not going to make the $300 million. You're going to make $65 million. You've just gotten destroyed. Call it $100 million. Okay?
Right.
You're supposed to make $300 million. That's your projection. You're going to find out you're only going to make $100 million, but your player payroll is $200 million. Now that means the owner is going to incur this massive loss. And what the owner is trying to do is say, hey, players, help me out. And and now if I'm the players who, you know, I would say to these guys, no. And here's, if I were a player, here'd be my perspective. Forget the money for a second. If I were just thinking about baseball and health and future, I'd say, look, we're late, man. We're way late. Half the season is over now. My body, which was supposed to be prepared from, you know, spring training, now here's our all-star break, and now the second half of the season, you know, for the last 75 days, yeah, I've been throwing in the backyard. I've been taking hacks, but I'm not anywhere near prepared to go play. And so I would just say, we're so late in the season. We missed the first half. We can't agree on anything. You know, I don't want to be quarantined to only one place. But you know what? Screw it. I'll see you guys in April of next year. And I could see a lot of players feeling that way, especially the high-end guys.
I will do a side shout-out to the Padres, because they did commit to pay their minor leaguers through the end of August, which is the end of the season. And in total, I think, because the Oakland A's got blasted because they said, we're not paying our minor leaguers their $400 a week. Because in total, it's like $1 million for the rest of the year to pay these guys that are living off $400 a week. Mm-hmm. So it's just a quick shout out to the Padres for keeping that.
Yeah, I was going to do the same thing, because we use the Padres as an example because that's our local team and we want to kind of make the tie. But they have been on the up and up when it comes to operating within their organization. So hats off to them for still representing for their people.
All right, let me do this. Let me go to Brittany Ertin. This conversation is going to be really interesting, because you got to remember that Brittany was on the absolute forefront of the COVID-19 news. Remember, it was early March, mid-March, when she's interviewing Sean Payton, the coach of the Saints, and he then finds out he has it. And so she had done the interview on Sunday. He announced on Monday. So there's a lot to get to here with Brittany Ertin, from, you know, COVID stuff to quarantine to the return of horse racing, the Triple Crown, Del Mar coming back. Let's make the show look a whole lot better than it has been. No offense, Barbara Bree. You were very adorable yesterday. You were wonderful. But here comes,
man. You didn't have to bring that up.
You didn't have to do that.
And, you know, this is a, you know what? Here's our friend Brittany. Hey, we appreciate you putting time into your appearance. I mean, honestly, I showered for this.
Same. Me too. Straighten my hair, you know?
Wow. Wow. That's, I feel flattered. Like I legitimately thought to myself, yesterday's show, for example, I was wearing a baseball cap. I was wearing a sweatshirt. I knew I hadn't worked out before we started. I felt gross. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to make sure I get my workout in. I'm going to get showered. I'm going to put stuff in my hair. And I am like blown away that you did the same. Thank you.
We're proper human beings.
I think so. I do. Hey, little did I know that when we all started talking about having you back on the show, that we would do it on a day where there's already news that Del Mar is coming back, you know? And so yes. I look forward to seeing you down here this summer.
Same to you. I can't wait. It's going to be a change, but I love how they're embracing the change and said it's going to be a season like no other.
Yeah, I was saying to our friend Craig Dato, I was saying, look, man, well, I don't know why you guys don't just find a way to open up. And I say it like that because what a marketing move. Not to say, hey, screw you, COVID-19 or Governor Newsom. Not like that. Just like, hey, summer's here. It's time to get back to life. And if you can't get 40,000 people in the track, you could increase demand by saying we can only have 10,000. I was just imposing my marketing concepts on our friend Craig.
Did it work?
Not really. Not that I know of. Not yet. What do you think? I mean, let's go back to the beginning of all of this, because today would be, if we were still in quarantine, Alex, what day would today be?
I believe it would be 73, 72.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Right. So, but Brittany, the whole quarantine started. I remember the story that you interviewed New Orleans Saints head coach Sean Payton. Mm-hmm. And then it was announced that he had tested positive. Right. And I thought, oh no, Brittany was putting a microphone in Sean Payton's face. And then she was putting the microphone in her face. I mean, she has a chance that she could have been exposed to it. So as soon as Payton announces that he's going into quarantine, he's got COVID, what happened to your life?
My phone blew up, Twitter blew up, everybody reaching out to see how I was feeling, how I was doing, which I appreciated. That was very kind of everybody. But I think it got in my head more than anything else, the anxiety of wondering every single day, was I going to feel okay? I knew I was going to have to quarantine. That was put in place immediately once we found out. So it was 14 days of quarantine. I didn't go back on air for at least 17 days. But for me, I never had any symptoms, never showed any signs of the virus, but I was just a little stressed out every morning. How was I going to feel?
Yeah. And do you live alone?
Yes. Or
you do. So you're solo. You're quarantined solamente.
Solamente. Well, I have a pair of friends that live across the street that once I was through quarantine, they became my quarantine crew. And I've only seen them for 70 days now. And I heard that was healthy. If you live alone, find a couple of people and then only see each other. So we have been incredibly strict, haven't seen anybody else. But it's nice to at least have some people, because being alone, I think that's another thing that would just add a layer of anxiety and stress to this entire situation.
Alex and John and me, the three of us guys, none of us live alone. You know, so there was some company. I have kids coming in and out of this place. And the only other person I really had contact with was my girlfriend. Alex, you have the fiance, right? And had, or almost had, the roommate, right?
Roommate's out this weekend. Yeah. So it'll just be me and the fiance.
Yeah. So, and John, you got the baby.
Yeah, man. It's weird with the little baby, because you don't know, because they say it doesn't affect them, but you never know. So you always have to be careful. Yeah.
So the three of us all have people.
How is it with kids, though? Yeah, I mean, is that... So I look at it as, okay, well, I don't have another person that I can annoy every single day, 24/7. And you're hearing all these stories about how couples are doing great during quarantine, how they're getting on each other's nerves during quarantine. And then children obviously add a whole nother layer. So how has it been for you guys?
Well, I can tell you for me, like I have my 13-year-old daughter, she goes to a private school. And I tell you, I fought her going to this private school. Thank goodness she went to this private school. Because I'm telling you, the day they closed that school, they were on Zoom with 30 kids in a classroom. And she has been in class every single day. My other kids who go to public high schools, I think the high schools were all trying to figure out like, oh my God, what do we do? And it took kind of a long time before they actually got back into school. But for me, I can just say it like this. Browner, I'd love to hear what you say. For me, I've got a 20-year-old, 18, 16, and nearly 14. They're pretty self-sufficient by now. But I loved all the family time, the family dinners. For me, I loved it. But we heard like from Landon Donovan. Landon Donovan's like, this sucks. He's like, I got to get out of my house. I can't stand anybody. Wife, kids, I got to get out of here. Browner, how is it having a little baby?
Well, she's 16 months. She's just learning to walk. She touches everything you bring in the house. And everything that you touch, you now have to be conscious of going back home and knowing that your child is going to touch it. And so even when every time she sneezes, you're like, you got that Rona? You got that Rona? You okay? And so you are always constantly on pins and needles of what you're doing. And you're very cautious of who you come into contact with because you know when you go home, you're going to want to kiss her. You're going to want to pick her up. You're going to want to touch her toys to play with her, read her books, feed her. And so you got to know, I have to be safe because I'm being safe for someone else. So it's difficult. But
all this though, Alex, and Browner's got a child to deal with. I got the four to deal with. At least you had your roommate and your fiance in the place. I mean, poor Brittany is quarantined by herself, herself.
Well, that was the thing for
Zoom.
Everybody was always like, oh, this must be hard on your relationship being with each other every single day. And for the first 50 days, 55 days, we sat on the same table for like 6 to 8 hours a day because she was working from home. I was doing the show from home. And it went well. So I'm not even like, I didn't experience the Landon Donovan effect of I got to get the hell out of here. So it went well for me. I can't complain at all.
So you're
engagement to learn a lot about yourself. Yeah. Engagement's still on.
Engagement's still on. I found out that I am the cook and cleaner of the house. Mm-hmm. She does not do any of that stuff. So I learned that in this quarantine.
He also learned the most important thing in this entire relationship. She has never seen the OJ chase.
That's true.
What?
She never
really knew. The white Bronco OJ chase she's never seen.
She never even knew about it. She never even knew about it until last week when I told
her. Where's she from?
She grew up here in San Diego.
Yeah, but
she
just
was. She was born the year that it happened. But that's no excuse. I mean, she works in the legal field. I don't understand. She's a paralegal. How do you not know about the biggest case? She knows about the case, but she didn't know the details.
Yeah, it was wait,
you got to watch the show now. The show's great.
We already did. This weekend, we binged People versus OJ. Yep.
But explain the circumstances. What brought it up that she didn't know about it?
Yeah, last Friday, there was a crazy police chase in LA, a super crazy police chase. And she asked me, why do you always watch these things? Why do you sit in front of a computer and put on a police chase? I don't get it. And I was like, I don't know. It's just a thing I grew up with. And she asked me, why are police chases so big in LA? I'm like, because of OJ, probably. That was the first one that I remember. And she had no idea what I was talking about.
There is something about car chases, though, that you can't stop watching. And I don't know why. Is it really an LA thing? Because I'm born and raised in the area. But when you have one on, you can't turn away. And then if I have to leave, I put it on my phone.
It's definitely an LA thing because when there's a chase outside of Los Angeles, LA stations pick up the feed and air it.
That's true.
Chicago, growing up in Chicago, I didn't even know that was a thing because they didn't. I mean, they had them there, but they never televised them. When I moved to San Diego, they were on TV and I always watched them like, oh, ooh, whoa. It's like live sporting events. It's awesome.
We follow a guy on Twitter. His name is Rob Perez. He's a basketball writer. And anytime there's a police chase, he takes his phone and he puts it up to the television and he puts it on Twitter for everybody to watch. So we can get sucked into like hours of police chases on this guy's Twitter feed. I don't know. It's a sick thing.
By the way, he's upgraded. He now doesn't point the phone at his computer. Now he somehow found a way to stream an actual broadcast, so the quality's clean now.
Another thing we're learning during quarantine.
Yeah.
How to upgrade our backgrounds, how to upgrade our, you know, methods of recording things.
Right.
Yeah. My laptop's on 4 books right now. My microphone's on 5 books right now.
Do you guys like the Zoom artificial backgrounds? Because I hate them.
Yes, I'm a big fan. But then you kind of disappear into them once you lean back.
Right. Yeah, if the green screen was a little better, like I would probably have a new background every day of the show. But the green screen, like she said, if you move too far, you disappear. If you move too close, it's weird.
Yeah.
You take me to Greece, take me back to rural Alaska, you know, I don't care.
So let me ask you this. So go back to the date, if you could. What was it? It had to have been early to mid-March, I believe, where you did that interview with Sean Payton before you went into quarantine. What was the date of that?
Probably March 14th.
Okay.
Somewhere around there. I'm going to pull up my calendar and find out.
Okay, so you do this interview with Sean Payton. And he's a horse owner, and he and Drew Brees and Jimmy Buffett have all owned horses together, you know?
March 14th.
Okay, March 14th. And were you guys in Arkansas?
Yes, it was for the Rebel Stakes. So it was when I flew out there, you know, my boss asked if I was comfortable still doing so. And that was really before we went into lockdown completely, stay at home orders. I said I felt comfortable with the situation. They weren't having any spectators at the track. That was something that was decided once I had already landed. And I felt comfortable with the situation, of course. Flew home. You could see everybody wiping everything down on the planes, people wearing masks. So we were seeing the beginning of what we obviously are seeing now. But I, at the time, I was just really thrilled to get an interview with Sean Payton. To me, that was a pretty special moment for my personal broadcasting career to not only meet him, he was so kind to give me the time. He even spoke on COVID-19, involving how it would affect the draft, NFL season as a whole. So for me, it was just an exciting moment and a great day of racing.
Okay, so when you then have to go into quarantine because you find out that Peyton has tested positive and you've got, at the time, they said, hey, just 2 weeks. And most of us thought at the time, okay, she'll quarantine for 2 weeks and then she'll go back to regular life. Little did we know that the 2 weeks later would turn into the 6 weeks thereafter.
Right. You
know, like that was my mindset when I saw this at the very beginning, like, okay, 2 weeks, she'll be fine. She's healthy. She's young. She's good. 2 weeks, she'll go back to life. It turned out to be 8 weeks and we're still on what feels like the back end of it. I don't know how it is in LA. Here in San Diego, I was telling the guys and we've all talked about our experiences. I walk the beach. I'm telling you, 99 out of 100 people do not wear masks. I've gone to restaurants in Encinitas and only people that are wearing masks are the people that are working there, although there's social distancing and fewer tables. But I don't know how you feel about it. You were there on the beginning, March 14th, and here we are now 2 months later, more. Do you think what you observe around Los Angeles, are we coming out of it up there?
I think we're still in quarantine. I'll never forget when I came out of the 14-day lockdown, I went to go pick up some food down the street. And I walked to a local pizza restaurant, you know, support your local restaurants. And somebody yelled outside of their car, "Get in your house!" it was very aggressive. And I was just walking to pick up my food and come back home. I've seen that change. Obviously, when you go into the grocery stores, more people are in them now than there were before, but I still don't see people getting too close. You walk on the sidewalk, it's a little bit like Pac-Man. You're still trying to avoid each other. So masks are on. I haven't seen us completely come out of quarantine yet here in LA. Restaurants are open.
Let me ask you this. Did you ever, because of the interview with Peyton and the sharing of the microphone, did you get a test?
No, because at the time, if you weren't showing any symptoms, you wouldn't have been able to get a test.
Have you gotten a test for the antibodies since?
No, because what's the theory really behind the antibody test? I've heard so many takes on it, whether or not you get the antibody test. Is it truly a reliable test? Does that mean that you're not going to be contagious to somebody else? I have not.
Okay, yet.
I haven't seen anybody that is of high risk. I haven't seen my family, which has been tough. So still keeping, you know, keeping this as a very serious thing because it's still out there.
Have you talked to Sean Payton since that interview?
No.
Really?
I have not. I was a small horse racing reporter. I'm sure he's had plenty of questions since.
No, I'm almost surprised because he's a good guy like that. I almost would have thought that your answer, and I had no idea, but I wondered if your answer was, yeah, you know, he reached out like, hey, I'm really sorry, I didn't know, and you were awesome, and gosh, I hope you're healthy. Like, I didn't know if you might have heard from him.
No, I didn't, but I've heard the same thing that you just said, that he's just a really, really kind guy, but I'm sure he's a little busy.
So. You know, you say this little horse racing, you know, I'm just this little horse racing broadcaster. You know, Alex and I, the three of us, and Browner was involved too at some points. We all worked together when we did a Saturday morning show from Del Mar.
How much fun was that?
Alex, I don't know how it was for you, dude, because I know you kind of got there early and you helped with the setup and everything else. And you know, wasn't your thing with the content, you know, but we would sit there, me, Alex, Brittany, Felix Taverna, the kitty cat. Mm-hmm. And it was only an hour and it was a lot of fun. I loved that show. We did it for 2 years and gosh, I would love to do it again this summer.
How much fun would that be? I just felt like for me, it was really my first introduction into radio and you made it so relaxing and fun and enjoyable. And I think the guests that we got on felt very relaxed. Do you remember when we interviewed Bo Derek?
I do.
It's just too much fun.
I love Bo Derek. I mean, we had Bo Derek, or we would bring on Jim Rome, or we'd bring on Bob Baffert. I mean, anybody related to the horse racing industry that had some notoriety and some fame, we wanted to talk to and kind of highlight that. Alex, did you hate that Saturday morning shift?
No, it was totally optional. I wasn't forced to do it as a 1090 employee. I was there on my own, because I wanted to. It wasn't bad. It was early. I mean, waking up Saturday morning at 7 a.m. for someone in their 20s is not that easy. So that was the only problem. It was early on a Saturday. That was it.
I don't know if I'd like it nowadays, because what I loved most about it was that I could show up in a baseball cap, no makeup, you know, workout gear and get away with it. Now with Zoom involved, I've got to put the makeup on and actually get dressed.
I just wonder this summer, real quick, excuse me, John, I just wonder this summer if we should do it again. You know, I don't know if you've heard the story or not, but 1090 is actually going to come back on the air.
That's amazing.
And it will coincide. Well, thanks. We're cautiously optimistic, but we think that by the time Del Mar opens July 10th, we think 1090 might actually be back on the air. So perhaps what we start to think about is rekindling the Del Mar Saturday show in this new world. We actually probably record it Friday afternoon and air it Saturday morning.
Well, you guys can do something like on video too. I know, sorry, Brittany, about the makeup thing, but because you guys will be the only people allowed in there. You know, like there's not, as of now, I think they said no fans. So if there are no fans, I think people would love to see what is Del Mar looking like right now. And I know on Saturday mornings, there's not much happening, but I mean, you could still take a video crew or video camera and walk around and show people.
It's not a bad idea though. What if we actually set up and did a live radio show / YouTube show, or maybe we recorded it in the morning, call it, you know, 8 to 9 in the morning and it doesn't air until 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm not really sure yet, but anyway, I had so much fun doing that show, Brittany. I would love to do it again. Big Brown, jump in here.
My question was this, Brittany, you are obviously used to being a shoulder-to-shoulder reporter. You're standing there, what you did with Sean Payton, you're asking questions, you're getting answers, you're asking questions. The back and forth of that, how do you see that going forward with COVID, people saying COVID's still going to be there as we go forward?
I think it's going to be social distance reporting. We saw a little bit of it on TVG the other day. Christina Blacker has been on site at Santa Anita, but on site in a sense of she is at the track house behind the track, and they've actually put up a mic, like they use a boom mic, so we can hear some of the jockeys on the track as they're warming up the horses, which has been fantastic. Highlight of the show, I really think she's been doing an unbelievable job. But Santa Anita had her do an interview with Richard Mandela, and what they did was had him standing at a microphone, and then she was at least, it seemed, 10 feet away, just asking the question. So I can see that that will be probably the case is moving forward, but you're going to have to prepare for it. I mean, you're going to have that mic on a stand, have just the person stand behind it, probably with a mask on. It's an adjustment. I mean, it's been an adjustment working from home. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I don't really feel being at home talking to a camera by myself is really making me shine.
Well, it's interesting. The whole work from home thing, what I have found is that, and I've told these guys 100 times, I am like more productive than ever before because I spent a lot of my time saying, hey, let's meet at the Brig for lunch. You know, and then it's 15 minutes over there and it's an hour for lunch and it's 15 minutes back. And before you know it, it's a 2-hour commitment just to go and sit down with somebody. And I have found that I'm 100 times more productive Zooming, phone calling, and really being stationary here at my house. By the way, I have this table in our podcast den. I've done like a marathon every day around this 4x4 table. So, I mean, I can't sit still. So I find that I'm very productive. But I also feel very confined. Like a lot of times I feel like I'm in my own prison here, you know?
I think I feed off of the energy of somebody else. That might be the most challenging part because you only get so much energy through the screen. Don't get me wrong. I'm incredibly grateful to have a job and be able to work from home, but it is an adjustment. It's something different, but you're right. I find that I'm busier now than I was before. Not quite sure why. Maybe there's just more time and you're not saying, driving 45 minutes to Santa Anita and coming back. So that takes up obviously quite a bit of your day.
Yeah. I think somebody said to me last week that the days are longer, but they go by faster. And I thought that was a pretty well said. So Brittany, how did you go from me and Alex are sitting there with you on Saturday mornings and you're working for TVG and you're a young, attractive female horse racing expert. And I say expert because you grew up in the business. Your dad is a famous trainer. You can speak the language of horse racing. So you check like every great box if you're a television executive, you know? But how do you go from the world of TVG, Southern California based, very horse racing intensive, to getting the opportunity to go to NBC and be part of their Triple Crown coverage, which is now going from TVG's a great audience of gambling fans, horse racing fans, but NBC and the Triple Crown is millions and millions of people that just focus on the big event. How did that transition in your career happen?
I think a lot of it had to do with the connection with Breeders' Cup and NBC and probably filling a void, to be honest. I don't know at the time how many young female reporters they had on NBC, but I think it was a matter of being a little persistent, consistently reaching out to the Breeders' Cup and, hey, I would love to send my reel over if they have any interest, if they have a space for someone like myself. I would love to come in, speak with them, show them what I can do. It was also help of my agent getting me in contact with those at NBC. It's been such an incredible experience. Covering the first Kentucky Derby was surreal, to say the least. And then now I've seen a Triple Crown and the first disqualification in history, you know, when a horse crossed the wire first and then DQ'd in the race. It's been thrilling, to say the least. And I feel pretty lucky. I wanted to continue.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, what an opportunity. You know, I remember for me, this is how I met Craig Dato. I was doing a CBS game. I don't know, the Chargers were playing the Houston Texans or the Buffalo Bills. This is 2003-ish, 4-ish. And I was working with a gentleman who was a horse racing producer. And he said, young guy like you should learn the sport of horse racing and get into horse racing TV. When I met Craig and Craig started to teach me horse racing, I actually said, I think I'd like this owner thing over here. That looks really cool. And we didn't have any money, but we went and we found the money so we could become owners rather than me spending so much time concentrating on the broadcasting side of it. I think it's really interesting to hear you talk about being persistent, that you used your horse racing contacts to help you with the television side of it. You didn't go necessarily directly to the TV side first.
Well, I think that might be a little difficult way of getting in. Say if I wanted to be on the Today Show and then I tried to go straight to the executive producers of the Today Show, it wouldn't work. There are steps that you have to take. And to me, the next logical step in horse racing to move forward, because I've always said that I want to cover more sports. That's always been a dream of mine, and I'm grateful for every opportunity that horse racing has afforded me, but I've always wanted to cover more. And for me, the next step to that was to, okay, so go on the national platform for horse racing, but how do I get there? And I knew Breeders' Cup was on NBC, and you know, Breeders' Cup is such, and as you know, an incredible organization. My favorite 2 days of racing, hands down. That might be, I don't know, an unpopular opinion for those that love the Kentucky Derby, but for me, it's all the Breeders' Cup. But it just felt like the logical next step. You can't take leaps. You have to take those small steps to climb the mountain, I guess.
So what happens next? We know that Del Mar will open on July 10th. We know that Santa Anita is currently running.
Right.
Will... explain from what you understand, because I'm not paying attention from a news perspective. The Triple Crown series is going to return in 2020. It will be different. It'll be different dates. But those three races in that condensed window of time, that is still going to happen this year. Is that right?
Yes, just a different order, as you mentioned. So we have the Belmont coming up on June 20th. The Derby, of course, is the first Saturday in September. So that's September 5th. And then October 3rd will be the Preakness. So instead of Derby, Preakness, Belmont, it'll be Belmont, Derby, Preakness. So the Preakness, the final leg, could we have a Triple Crown champion in this new 2020 version? Maybe. I almost think it's more difficult because it's difficult to keep a horse at their peak for that extended amount of time.
This is a weird question that I never thought about. Are horses,
we like weird questions.
Are horses influenced by there being fans in the stands?
Yes.
Because we always talk about athletes and how they respond without fans. What about horses?
100%. But I think it's a reverse effect. I actually think it's better for the horses that might have nerves or quirky antics without having fans in the stadium or in the at the track in the grandstand. I think it helps them, especially the young horses. You're going to notice them being a lot more relaxed. They won't be looking around as much because they don't hear the crowd noise. So I actually think it would have a positive effect on the horses.
See that? Listen to how Alex, listen to the mind. Okay. This is a guy who sat with you and I for two straight summers every Saturday morning. And when you think about it from a gambling perspective, there are some horses that don't perform well, that don't like the crowds, that don't like the noise, that do get nervous around people. And if you all of a sudden looked at a 30-to-1 horse and you had no idea that he freaked or she freaked out because of the crowds, but now there's no crowds, maybe I should be betting on that 30-to-1 horse. We need some insider info. That's a good question, Alex.
Yep. That was a great question. I think it affects jockeys though in the other sense. So I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with a jockey named Frankie Dettori. Mm-hmm. He is a rock star, probably the most famous jockey in all the world. He feeds off of crowd energy. So Nick Luck and I, who's a presenter in England, we do a show on Thursday, so actually today, called Cocktails and Conversations. And Frankie Dettori was on there and asked that specific question. How do you think it's going to affect you to not have the crowd? And he said, I'm probably going to have to, you know, I feed off of them, so it might be a challenge. It's going to be different.
Yeah, because my biggest thing is I'm always in the paddock. That's where I sit for the show. You know, that's where we always are. So you see some horses freak out like crazy. Yeah. And someone's just cool with it. But I wonder, once they get to the gate, are our horses like, do they get in the zone too? Or are they still affected by freaking out 10 minutes ago? That's just a super, for betters, that's got to be a mind fuck. For sure. Oh, we can cuss on the show. Sorry.
You don't have to beep it out.
No.
Well, I don't know what we were talking about, but that just throws it all off because Brittany's like, "Whoa, what happened? I thought we were on radio. What exactly just took place there?" So now the Triple Crown races will go on, and I gotta say credit to the sport, because you would hate to see these races not go on if they can go on. And believe it or not, while everybody's been jonesing for live sports, that you'll watch Tom Brady and Peyton Manning play golf, or you know, you'll watch a NASCAR race when you may not have watched NASCAR. One thing people may not realize is the sport of horse racing has been ongoing, and gamblers, they've known, and horse racing has persisted throughout this. It's just not been highly publicized.
I think if you look at the handle numbers at the tracks that are up and running, it's pretty remarkable how much people still want to satisfy that itch of wagering. And horse racing really is the only game in town. So, for instance, Santa Anita's handle, I believe, on Memorial Day was around $15 million, which is probably double what it would have been on a normal Memorial Day. Churchill Downs, I think on their opening day, it was around $12 million. It consistently across the board at these tracks that are up and running are showing huge growth when it, in terms of how much people are wagering as a whole. And it's great for the sport because for anyone that doesn't know, everything that transpires in the morning and all of the support for the backside workers and their health care, it all comes from live racing. That's why they were pushing so hard to get live racing under safe circumstances up and running again, because it's the economic engine that funds everything in the morning.
Yeah.
So it's huge.
Yeah. I would, it's really interesting. Hey, what other sports do you want to cover, by the way? I mean, you're such an expert in horse racing, but you have such interest in other sports. What else do you want to cover? If I'm an NBC executive and I say, well, Brittany, tell me what you want to do. What do you want to do?
Well, if you're an NBC executive, then I'm going to know what their entities are. And I'm going to say football, I would love to cover. Hockey, surely. The Olympics.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Olympics would just be... I grew up watching the Olympics. I'm a huge gymnastics, figure skating fan. But I understand that that is, in horse racing terms, the grade one. Creme de la creme.
I'm aware.
So it takes steps.
No, you can.
But I'm a huge baseball fan. I'm a huge baseball fan.
Do you think baseball is going to play this year? Because I have been saying to these guys, I don't think baseball will play. Then my dad, who does in his retirement, he does like drug testing of baseball players. He told me that they were told that these guys were told, hey, get ready. There's going to be a 3-week spring training. But based on what I'm seeing with baseball players and the salaries and how much, if you make $30 million a year in baseball, and you play the second half of the season, the proposal is like the $30 million a year guy makes like $7 million. Don't quote me exactly on the numbers. But I just don't know if you're a $30 million a year player if you're going to go play baseball for $7 million a year when you're concerned potentially about everybody living in a bubble and possibly getting it and spreading it. I don't know. I don't think baseball is going to get played. I've been saying that. What do you think?
My dad called me yesterday saying, hey, I heard baseball was going to get going up again. And my dad's a diehard Dodgers fan, so he follows it pretty closely, but maybe he's just hopeful and that's not actual news.
I don't know. I don't know. We'll see what happens. We'll see if baseball comes back. Brittany, it is great to visit with you. Thank you so much for the time today. We needed to pretty up the show, man. It's just like the three of us sitting here, you know?
Hey, you guys look great. Thank you for having me. It's been a while and it's fun to catch up with all of you. And I like the idea of bringing back Del Mar Saturdays.
Yeah, me too.
On whatever day it might be.
One of our great friends listeners is a guy by the name of Coach Steve Bogner. And Coach Steve is...
You've mentioned Coach Steve before. Coach, I know this
Steve,
name.
Let me tell you that Coach Steve, if you're ever in San Marcos and you're at the Costco in San Marcos, Coach Steve is the guy who runs the gas station islands. You know, so if you're going to get your gas at Costco in San Marcos, you're going to run into Coach Steve Bogner. He runs that whole thing. That's his show. And he is the biggest Brittany Ertin fan on planet Earth. He's going to lose his mind today when he sees you on the show. And he's probably in our YouTube chat right now losing his mind.
Well, shout out to Coach Steve. And nice. Great friends. I mean, are you guys going to win another race opening day? It's pretty much tradition.
I hope so. You know, we actually said to our investors this year, given the circumstances that, you know, as of right now, we don't know if people are going to be able to get into the track to watch the races. We did not liquidate. We did not pay people back. We just said your money stays in. The horses we have will remain. And we're going to run them as like year two. So, right. So yeah, we're coming back to the track. I just hope we can get into the track to see what's going on at the track.
Yeah, true. Fingers crossed. If not, I figure Brigantine, once they're open, we can at least look over.
Right. Exactly. We'll watch from the brig. Brittany, it's great to be with you. Thank you so much for all this time today.
Thank you all. It was wonderful seeing you guys, even through the computer screen.
Yeah, we'll see you when you get down here. Okay, thank you, Brittany. Sorry, Barbara, for what I said before the start of all of that. you know.
Just let it go.
All right.
Keep going. Keep going.
Beautiful young lady, and she's talented and smart and everything else. And Barbara's just a lot more experienced. And
come on,
hey, hold her to it, man. Because when she becomes a big star, she still said she wants to do Del Mar Saturday with you, man.
Yeah, that's right. Well, if she becomes the host of the Today Show, that's what I'm going to say to her. Come on, help me out.
Yeah.
If Barbara becomes mayor, we're really going to have a problem now.
All right, let me do this. Let me say thank you yet again to our sponsors, Corky's Pest Control, 1-800-901-1102. Refer a great friend and get $35 sent your way. Cork, we love you. We appreciate you. And stay quarantined until everything is all clear, because those of us who are younger and healthy and arrogant, we're out and about. But for those of you that are more sophisticated, generationally speaking, stay home and stay safe. Corky's Pest Control, 1-800-901-1102. Mountain Trust Mortgage and Realty Services, 858-376-1299. Never make a move in real estate without our guy, Koopa Loop, Gary Cooper. Let him go to work for you. Let him earn your business. Torrey Holistics. Well, that leads us right into this young man right here. Grande Alejandro Padilla, hermano número uno. Es mamá says, es muy guapo. Time for the highlight of the day, man. Presented by Torrey.
It's time for the highlight of the day, man.
Do you want to get high, man?
I'm just really high.
Highlight of the day is brought to you by Torrey Holistics. It's like you already know. Go to the website. It looks new, looks fancy, looks very, very nice. But all you got to do is scroll down to the Torrey Holistics banner. It's the first one. You click it, and it takes you to that page. That's going to get you 20% off your next Torrey Holistics purchase with a minimum $75 purchase. The promo code is Grande, G-R-A-N-D-E, like the singer Ariana Grande.
Nice.
Grande, Grande, Grande. It's very easy to use, because we always say, like, if you're watching, you could see it. We never talk about the people that are just listening. So if you don't know how to spell Grande, G-R-A-N-D-E, Grande, torreyholistics.com/greatfriends, 20% off, minimum $75 purchase. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I sent you guys a video earlier today, and I hope this does not get us taken down, because it is from a wrestling promotion named AEW. Mm-hmm. And what my podcast Lakers partner tells me is that it's a big up-and-coming wrestling promotion.
Yeah.
Chris Jericho is the champion, and mm-hmm. for some reason, Mike Tyson made a cameo yesterday. And Chris Jericho was pissed because I guess 10 years ago, Tyson betrayed him in a WWE match. And Jericho demanded an apology. That was the storyline of what happened. And honestly, Mike Tyson, that's a highlight of the day, because as buff as he is, he can't rip a shirt off. Right, he just cannot rip a shirt off. And it's on mute, so we could talk over it, but just hit play. Look at him. He's trying to rip a shirt off. He's ripped as hell. He's stuck. He is stuck. He's stuck.
Listen,
Then he goes crazy.
Whoever made that shirt, you just made a commercial of how tough your shirt is. Iron Mike couldn't even rip it.
Yep.
Dude, let me tell you something. First of all, I remember Billy Ray and I one time doing an interview with Tyson, and Tyson talking about how much he grew up loving wrestling. Mm-hmm. And to see him in a wrestling ring performing, you know?
Look at him flex in front of Jericho. Like, he was going crazy, man.
And Chris Jericho, you know, I saw him at the National Association of Broadcasters Convention in Dallas last year, because he's got, like, one of the most popular podcasts going.
Yeah.
It amazes me that all these years later, having been out of wrestling for so long, how big of a star he was going back, I promise you guys, late 90s.
Yeah.
You know?
Y2 Jericho, dude.
Yeah. That he can be here 20 years later, and Tyson can be here 20 years later. And this AEW. I think it's on TNT.
It's extreme, dude. They do crazy stuff.
But that'd be cool, though. That'd be cool if Tyson is doing wrestling, because I don't know what he was doing. He showed up with Vitor Belfort, Henry Cejudo, Rashad Evans, like big names in the UFC. That's his entourage next to him.
Yeah, who's the dude that ripped his shirt off next to him? Who's the white guy that rips his shirt off?
That's the only guy I don't know who that is.
Who he played
for. His shirt came off.
Is it like that old school wrestling, Browner, where there's just like hit chairs and barbed wire? And
dude, if you watch this will give you throwback chills. Dude, they jump off of 40-foot high stuff. They hit people with chairs. They do real tacks in their tack matches. They got real barbed wire. This is old school raw wrestling. And I've watched a couple episodes, and I like it. I like the new stuff. Yeah. I like this.
Did I ever tell you guys, did I ever tell my Chris Jericho story on this show before?
I don't think so.
Sounds about, like you're about to.
Well, I guess I will. I guess I'll throw him under the bus a little bit. But I was in LA. I was staying in downtown LA to watch USC UCLA 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And my cousin who built the website, skymbr.com, she took us out to this real fancy restaurant up in Pasadena.
Shout out Nancy.
Shout out Nancy. And we go to the steakhouse and we're enjoying our meal. And I look over and I just see like this like guy that I'm like, that guy looks familiar. And I'm like, oh shit, that's Chris Jericho. Oh, it is Chris Jericho. He's here. Oh, cool. And I thought that was it. Little did I know that Chris Jericho would proceed to pound, I don't know, 3 to 5 bottles of wine on his table with him and his date. Mm-hmm. And I went to the restroom. He was there and he looked like he had three or four or five bottles of wine in him. And he goes back to his table. I finish my meal. I'm having a good time. I had a couple drinks myself. But then I look over as he's leaving and he's literally being carried out by his date or wife or girlfriend or whatever. And I was like, way to go, Chris Jericho. That's the way you do a steakhouse right there, man.
Boy.
Just full, man. Just full.
Yeah, you know? It's full. I can't walk. I can't walk. It's too full.
He had a wine cramp.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of wine and Tory Holistics, that weed wine, it doesn't taste great, but God, it gets you like it's fun.
I'm doing
that's a good way to describe being high. Yeah. It's fun.
I'm doing drops of CBD and CBD with a tiny, tiny bit of THC every day right now. Because that migraine I was talking about last week, my head's been hurting since then. So, but a lot less every day. Every day.
All right. Well, check it out.
That could be Corona Part 3.
Yeah, right. Toriolistics.com. Use our promo code GRANDE. There's your highlight of the day, man. All right, John Browner, from that. Well, by the way, now that you're all strapped in and you're wearing your seatbelt, what kind of car is that taken out of? I'm curious.
A minivan.
Oh Jesus, man! Yeah.
Looks like you're in a kid's booster seat, dude.
Hey man, somebody asked me to strap in for the show, so you know I hooked the people up.
All right, well, the question is, what is you doing?
What is you doing?
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
What is you doing?
So let's have a conversation. Again.
He always forgets.
Give me one more. All right.
What is you doing?
Minnesota Police Department. Minnesota District Attorney. What is you doing? You now have, there's video surfacing of you have 20 to 30 cops protecting this guy's home who put his knee on Greg Floyd's throat until he no longer was with the living.
George.
Sorry. How about you do this? Arrest the man. Clearly there's a crime on camera, cop or no cop. So how about you help the safety of the city where all these buildings are being burned? These people are fighting in the street with cops, now putting other cops' lives in danger. The rioting, I understand people have their says on rioting. For me, it doesn't help the situation. Black people destroying their own neighborhoods does not help the situation. So if you are in charge of pressing charges, whether it's the district attorney, whether it's the Department of Justice, whether it's the mayor, whoever needs to make this phone call, arrest this man. That would calm what is happening in the streets of Minnesota. The problem that Black people have with justice, quote unquote, is that Ahmaud Arbery's murderers were out walking the streets 2 months after that action on that video because multiple district attorneys recused themselves from pressing charges in this case. Black people fear that you may now be facing something similar if you do not give swift action. Firing these men was the right thing to do. Whoever fired them, charged them. You're not saying they're guilty, but you're treating them as if they committed a crime because police officers are not above the law. If you want to restore respect from the community to police, charge this man. It's not that hard because if 4 black men choked a white man on camera, on the street, all four of them would be in jail charged with murder because they should be. This man is no different. But instead, you have police officers who are now have to answer for his actions protecting his home. Do yourself a favor. Help us help you and charge this man. Not saying he's guilty, even though I feel like he is. Make sure he has his day in court because that's the way the law is supposed to work. What is you doing?
Yeah, it's not good up there. I mean, it really is. We talked about it yesterday and it's pretty emotional stuff. And, you know, it's just hard to believe that you see the video and you're just like, whoa. Cause you know, then what happens is as a news outlet, if you're a media outlet, then you bring up the video from 6 years ago of that really big dude in New York and he, the cop puts him in a chokehold and then he says, I can't breathe. And then people get, Kaepernick into the conversation and that turns things even more emotional. And, leaders from the black community, and I say that I think of LeBron as being one of those, then he stokes the fire because he brings Kaepernick into it. And it becomes this snowball where the way I look at it is, oh my goodness, we're coming out of this COVID thing. We hope. And 100,000 Americans have died. By the way, real quick, I have a friend of mine who's a doctor. And last night he was at this dinner that I was at. And he was telling me that in his practice, that anybody who has any respiratory issues and then dies, you're supposed to put that as a COVID death because I believe it's Medicare pays more money than, and I got confused at some point. Obviously you can tell. Bottom line is the doctors were going to get paid more if they reported it as a COVID death.
You get more money from the federal government if you're having corona death cases in your hospital.
Dude, that's horrible. I mean, because we're all being, fear-mongered about how many hundred thousand people have died in America and all of COVID. What if really only like 30 or 40,000 really died of COVID, but these doctors were doing what the rest of America is doing, which is taking the government handout. Wait, they'll give us more if we report COVID? Okay, let's report COVID. My point is that you got this, America's supposed to be coming out of this. And we always try and come out of things stronger. We're Americans. We're going to come out of this thing stronger. George Bush standing at ground zero. They're going to know who we are. And now here we are supposed to be coming out of this thing. Do we want to touch each other again? Do we want to be in stadiums with each other? Do we want to be in restaurants with one another? And we're supposed to be theoretically coming together. And then all of a sudden this happens and we're not coming together. We're being torn further apart. And so the whole thing just makes me crazy, dude.
Look up top, bro.
Well, that's just it. I mean,
you have racism in America is always, it's always been heightened. And now that everything's being videoed at the highest level, you have obviously the pandemic worldwide happening everywhere. And you have the president of the United States throwing a hissy fit about his Twitter account. So you decide what's happening.
There's no doubt. Listen, I haven't talked about this today. And before we do get out of here, I do want to talk about this for a second. Having Trump essentially threatening social media platforms is just fascinating to me. I swear to God, man, it's fascinating because I asked the question this way and I posted it on Sided. Alex, you can bring it up if you don't mind. I wrote it this way. Trump is now looking to, and I put it in quotes because this is the way the headline was written on CNN. Trump is now looking to limit the power of big social media companies. And I actually wrote it. Is this America or is this China? Who is going to win this war of egos? Because you got to remember now, you got Jack Dorsey, who's Twitter, a billionaire. You got Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook, a multi-billionaire. And you've got Trump, a billionaire, / the president of the United States, most powerful guy on the planet.
You spelled Dorsey wrong.
Oh, sorry.
I know you don't like typos.
Yeah, I didn't see that. If this were China or the Soviet Union or, Cuba back in the day, Soviet Union, Russia, kind of same thing. Anyway, if you were one of those communist countries and you limited press, that's what communists do. But in America, that's the beauty of America. That's the beauty of freedom of speech, freedom of press. And here's the other thing. Social media platforms are not news organizations.
Right.
They are entertainment platforms.
Thank you.
So for me to think that Facebook is going to filter the difference between news and fake news, and this is why I think where I believe Dorsey made a terrible decision to interfere with Trump's tweets was a bad decision, because you could have interfered with his tweets 5 years ago and you chose not to.
You're starting a slippery slope, bro.
Oh, you've opened up a massive shitstorm. And so I asked the question, who's going to win this war of egos between Trump and Dorsey? Dude, I actually think Trump will win, because Dorsey should not have messed with Trump's content. You purport to be a public forum, yet people get kicked off Twitter for much less. They get their account suspended. And yes, it's true that conservatives complain that Twitter is on the left and it will shut down a conservative opinion.
Facebook's on the right.
But listen, all I can tell you is this. I don't know why you say Facebook is on the right.
Because they take down things all the time on the opposite end. That's all.
Yeah, but don't they take down stuff from the right?
They take down stuff from both sides of the aisle. But Facebook has been found through a study to take down more leftist opinions than right-leaning opinions.
I'm shocked to hear that information. But the bottom line for me is this. You should not be messing with people's content if you are a public forum and a place for free speech. If you're not, you're not. And you say, well, these are private companies. No, they're not. They're public companies. So I just, look, all I'm saying is this, is that I believe Dorsey made a terrible decision to mess with Trump's content. I'm of the opinion, let his words be a reflection of who he is. He's a big bully. We all get it. Okay, fine. We've obviously tolerated it and people voted for him and he's the president of the United States. But to try and shut down media companies. Look, when you insult the New York Times, when you tell everybody that CNN is fake news, when you throw that kind of stuff out, that's one thing. To try and use governmental power to try and regulate social media platforms. Now we're starting to talk about some real scary dictator shit. Okay. We're not talking about the president who has an ongoing ego battle with another CEO or a company by name. Now we're talking about some communist dictator shit. And I don't know about you guys, support Trump, not support Trump, regardless of your political opinion, that should scare everybody. Okay.
I will make this extremely short and directly to the point, because I know Alex has got a lot of work to do. If you are Donald Trump, you, when this is over, will be a citizen. Jack Dorsey will still own Twitter. You cannot, as president in your time of power, become a dictator because it is something that you don't like. Every president has had someone say or write something about them that they did not like. They did not shut down the newspaper. This man is literally trying to censor a person, by the way, who hates to be censored, is trying to now use his power to censor.
But did you read
that speak for itself?
But did you listen? If you read, and I put it there for you on the side of debate, the way that they're the way they've drafted this. The way they wrote it, in a country that has long cherished the freedom of expression, we cannot allow a limited number of online platforms to handpick the speech that Americans may access and convey online. Listen, they're right. Jack Dorsey had no business doing what he did, in my opinion. Okay. And he should have let Trump's words speak for themselves. And the bottom line for me is that Dorsey now has made a mistake, and you've seen how Trump has let everything slide off of him. I don't know who, again, wins this war of egos, and that to me is what this is all about now. But don't think that Twitter should be censoring the president of the United States of America, no matter how much of a bully or a jerk he might be, no matter what accusation. Well, no, but they added to his content and said, you need to go do some fact checking. Well, you know what? Let people fact check.
You are head of a social media platform. Yes?
Yes.
App coming soon, people. Stay woke. Would you operate in the same way if a person on your platform is on your platform bringing attention to it for hate speech, bringing attention to it for misinformation, as the CEO or as the COO or however that figurehead's name is, would you be okay with someone using your platform to generate misinformation on a worldwide scale?
Let me ask you a question to answer your question. Has Twitter done anything prior to today or prior to this week about Trump's tweets?
Well, no.
So they've made a decision. The business decision was made. He's good for our business.
True. I'm not saying that he is or he isn't. I'm asking you, as a owner or a provider for a social media platform, would you be against or would you act in the same way if someone was using your platform to give out misinformation?
Hate speech, yes. Hate speech will get blocked. Hate speech will get deleted. Hate speech will not be tolerated.
But isn't that the same thing?
Well, then I have a question. Why didn't Twitter take down his tweets for the last 5 years? Or why didn't Twitter interfere with his tweets in the last 5 years?
That part, I don't know.
Well, because he's good for their business.
But he's still good for their business, yes.
Of course.
It's weird that it took him this long to do it. I think that's the only thing. I think it's they did it at a random ass time for really random tweets. Like, he's done a way worse and said way worse, but I just think it's random and people are freaking out because it was just like, why now? Why now, four years into it?
And the topic of mail-in balloting is what broke the camel's back. That's an interesting thing for that to be what they were like, this is enough.
Right. But it's an ever-changing world, man. If a social media company is learning on the fly or doing things on the fly, and for whatever the reason is, like, we just got to get used to it. You got to get used to change.
I will tell you this, that, for us, we're 2.5 years into our company, and Twitter, I don't know, Alex, you could probably look it up real quick, how long Twitter has been in existence. Twitter has been an evolving platform the entire time, and Dorsey is constantly on the hot seat about what content should or shouldn't be moderated, how it should be moderated, who's kicked off and whose political opinions are getting them suspended. I mean, it is an ongoing process, but I do think that Dorsey, just because he's Jack Dorsey and he's the CEO of Twitter, and we're a young up and coming startup company, I don't look at him as being so brilliant that he can't be criticized. Look, Jack Dorsey, in my opinion, made a huge mistake, opened a huge can of worms, and has clearly now defined Twitter as being anti-Trump and protective of the left. And I don't care because I don't really have these types of strong political opinions, but I'm just an observer of media. And I think that if I were to be in the same situation and Trump were to use Sided, I'd be celebrating just the exact same way Dorsey and Twitter has for the last 5 years, because he's single-handedly the most important person on the platform. He's got the followers, he's got the engagement, he's got the worldwide reach, he's got the title. And if they wanted to shut down or censor him, they probably could have or should have done it 4+ years ago. Instead, they've let it go because it's good for their business. And now here they are. And I don't think it is the job. I agree with Zuckerberg. I don't think it is the job of the social media platform to filter news, because filtering news should be the responsibility of the individual. The issue is, in today's world, there are so many different places to get real or fake news, and you may not be smart enough to know the difference between the two. And so we should leave it to the individual to filter, not for Facebook or Twitter to filter. Believe me, Facebook and Twitter have enough information about you, and they filter enough content to you that you don't need them filtering information like that for you. Just my opinion. So there you go. All right, listen, let's rock out of here. Let's get out of here today. Because otherwise, on a topic like this, who knows how long we could go. Okay, thank you, Corky's Pest Control, 1-800-901-1102. Thank you, Mountain Trust Mortgage and Realty Services, 858-376-1299. Thank you, Torrey Holistics. Use our promo code GRANDE and save 20%. Way to go, smsglobal.com. Thank you for our text messaging partnership, and everybody should be using smsglobal.com. Rockin' Wines, I'm sending shout-outs your way. Total Tea Clinic, we're getting you back soon. And Coast Care Partners, if you're looking for a new job, use our referral code, Great Friends. John Browner, final thought.
Have a good afternoon, people.
Alex Padilla, final thought.
Same shit. Peace out.
All right. Well, with that, much love to everybody. Peace.